live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network again. TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And also Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm so excited to have this guest on the program. I had her on once, and it's so great that I have a connection with a PR firm that I can bring her back on a regular basis. How cool is it? Well, you'll say, why? She's from Dancing with the Stars. She's a dancer. And she firsthand knows what's going on, fans, of what's happening. So I'm so excited to welcome the program, and she's competing with it as well. Sharna Burgess from Dancing with the Stars. Sharna, thanks for calling, and I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Your schedule is so busy, Sharna, and just tell me how tough it is to even chit-chat for 13 minutes with me with what's going on with Dancing with the Stars now. You're with your business and also all the other engagements you have. It's crazy when you're taping, isn't it? For sure.
Absolutely. My world is crazy and constant right now. I was choreographing until 4 o'clock in the morning last night and back up again at 8 o'clock to deal with some press and continue with some creative on some other things that I'm doing. So there is definitely no rest for the wicked right now.
And when we were first talked, it was you got eliminated early last year and, last season. And I just, it's so interesting to see you talk. We talked about on the show last time about how you're going to be one that continues to be on the show because you get along with the celebrities. You're able to work with them. And there are some dancers that just absolutely can't connect. So tell me some of the experiences so far that you've had with some of the celebs you've worked with because of the switching and all the craziness of this year.
You mean for this season?
Yeah, for this season. Yeah, for this season. How crazy.
It's been incredible. We're obviously only doing our Stitch Up Challenge this week, and I had my first day with my new partner yesterday. And I'm incredibly happy. He's wonderful. He's lovely. And we're getting along great. And I think we're going to create something really fun together. It's certainly very different for us to have to do this midway in the competition. Very much a very big part of Dancing with the Stars is that journey that you create with your celebrity, how well you get to know each other, and just that relationship that you build. And so we sort of now have 6 days to create that or find that, I guess, probably a better word. So it's very interesting. But, we have had a couple of weeks to be familiar with each other anyway. But it's going well. And I have to say, this cast this season is just absolutely wonderful. There was not one male celebrity left in the cast that I wouldn't have wanted to dance with. But, I mean, from the start of the cast in general, everybody is just amazing. And in saying that, I'd just like to say that I totally miss Billy D. He's just such a wonderful man, and it was just such a shame to not have him around anymore, but of course we understand why, and told him that he has to come back and visit as much as he can.
Oh, yeah, so kind of update us on that for myself as well. What's happening there? I think it was a big news, right, with Billy D you're talking about, correct?
Yeah, Billy D announced on Monday that his doctor has told him he is not physically capable of continuing on Dancing with the Stars. He knew that he was in quite a bit of pain in the last few weeks of rehearsals, but he went to the doctor to see how bad it was because he couldn't quite judge it. And unfortunately, he was told that he had to stop. And it's such a shame. I mean, he's just such a wonderful man with such a cool elegance about him. You know, he's just been in the business for so long. He's so educated but so humble and has a great sense of humor. So it's definitely a shame to not have him around. But we're obviously all thinking of him and wishing him the best with his health and told him that he has to come back and visit. And hopefully we'll see him around CBS at the studios a couple times.
Oh, absolutely, that's a definite surprise, and I saw that on Good Morning America, Ken, with my loud family in the morning when I'm all with them and working from home. I understand completely what's going on.
Yeah.
So when you heard about the switch, did that make you nervous at all, knowing that you're going to switch partners, especially at a time, and then they announce it, you know, that's the first thing they were promoting with Dancing with the Stars was the whole switch thing. Did that make you nervous when you knew that was going to happen?
It really did. I mean, We had our first, as professional dancers, we had our first rehearsal day where we had to set our celebrities. We didn't know anything that was going on. We just had to get started with some of the group numbers that we do this season. And so producers sat us down and we all had our little, you know, chat that we have before every season about how we're excited and the changes that are happening. And all of a sudden, Conrad and, you know, and team announced that they're thinking about this thing called a switch-up challenge. They're not really sure if it's going to happen. They've got to work out the logistics of it, see if it's even possible. But, you know, not to worry, but it's something that just might happen. So we should know that it's a thought. We all walked away thinking it wasn't going to happen. And then, lo and behold, a week and a half later, not even a week later, I think we're on GMA and we announce it. And we all looked at each other like, oh, so this is happening. And I think the most frightening part was that we didn't understand it. I had done so many interviews with people asking me, you know, what it meant and what it, how it worked, and I couldn't even answer the question. You know, I had three different ideas of what it could possibly be, but I think they were still playing around with the idea. But now that we know it's just 1 week that we go back to our original celebrity and there's no elimination based off of that week, and I think it's a little bit of fun mid-season, you know, and I think we all just need to embrace it and see how it goes. It might be great and it might be terrible, but we won't know until we try.
So, Sharna, do you think you have a shot at winning this year? Especially looking at when you're going back to your partner and all that stuff, especially, like I said, being eliminated very early last season, do you think you have a shot?
You know, Charlie has all the talent to win, absolutely. He really, really does. And he has the drive and the dedication. You know, he's literally the sweetest guy on the planet and the most genuine, honest person I've ever met. If anyone I've ever danced with deserves it, it's him. But, you know, this is a competition based off of who our fans want to see more of and whose journey they enjoy the most and who they connect to the most. And so it's always really hard to say. You know, yeah, he has competition in Meryl, in Amy, in Danica, in Candace. They're all very, very talented and very lovable. And everyone is just sort of still building their journey right now. I'm definitely working towards that final with him. I mean, he's such a competitive nature as well with his, within his own self, that I think he would be devastated if he didn't make it to the final. But he's also in it just to enjoy the experience and have fun. So we're working towards it, but wherever we get to, we're grateful.
Absolutely. We're talking to Sharna Burgess from Dancing with the Stars, and I think you're going to win, and I'm rooting for you, and I love your partner, especially, you know, you're thinking about the Olympics and all these things. Let's go ahead and have you win, you know, and I think you're so excited about having somebody that has some experience in choreographing and performing. That must be make you happy as well, having that partner being chosen for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very, very different to what Charlie has done before. And he, I think we haven't been able to see yet in our packages on the show how much he struggles. Contemporary obviously came to him quite naturally. I just had to teach him transitions from foot to foot because he's not on ice. But the ballroom dancers, though he has an understanding of what it is and what they mean, he has no understanding of the technique or how to execute them. He just knows what they look like. So I hope that soon you get to see in our packages how much of a hard worker he is, because at the beginning of the week, it's held together by safety pins and it's really awkward and a little bit uncomfortable. And by the end of the week, he's just, you know, blossomed into this, you know, swan-like ballroom dancer. He just has such a grace when he dances. But that's through hard work and dedication. It's not necessarily a natural gift to him.
Are you going to give any other people, who do you think your biggest competition on the show is? You mentioned a lot of good dancers that are the celebrities. Who else do you think is going to be a challenge for you to keep going all the way to the finals?
You know, it's really hard to say. I think Danica and Val really impressed me last week. I loved the routine that he did for her. Also, Amy is just so wonderful and inspiring and talented. You know, the way that she and Derek are working together and making it work is just wonderful. And she has beautiful expression when she dances. And I think she's just such a lovable, incredible woman that I think you'll find her in the finale. And who knows, she could take it home. Also, Meryl. I mean, how could you not say Meryl? She is incredible. That foxtrot that she did last week with Max, flawless. So who knows? I think it's those three that are our biggest competition right now. But also, look, James. Look at James. I mean, last week he was absolutely fantastic and he's improving at a great rate every week. So it's, I'm not even trying to be politically correct. I'm just honest telling you, I have absolutely no idea.
Well, that's what I want our fans, and especially we'll be tweeting this out and making sure that all the fans of Dancing with the Stars get these updates from Sharna. But you said the media has been crazy because being eliminated earlier, you don't get the opportunity. But now being already in mid-season, it must be so crazy, your schedule, with all these interviews of interviewing different with different people and different press and different things, and how much Dancing with the Stars is becoming just an icon of a show. Like, I mean, you could, everywhere you walk, you get recognized. It just must be wild, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is crazy and surreal in so many ways when you walk through the street or when I go to the Grove and I get recognized and have people screaming for my autograph. I still, I guess, feel like that ballroom dancer from Australia, you know, in very much inside my heart that thinks, wow, really me? You want my autograph? You know? So it's funny. People come up and I'm so sorry to bother you. Can I please? And it's like, oh my goodness, no, it's a compliment to me. Absolutely. What do you want me to sign? You know, it's still quite surreal and wonderful. So, but I'm enjoying every single part of it and truly grateful for a show like Dancing with the Stars to give ballroom dance is a platform to show what we can do because that never existed before that.
And we're talking again to Sharna Burgess from Dancing with the Stars. And I kind of am pinching myself with the lineup I had today and yesterday and all these great people. But one thing, listeners out there, interviewing these major celebrities. And like I was telling you, Sharna, off air, who I have on, and yesterday I had Noel Pikus Pace on the show, that it's just unbelievable. But they're, you guys are so down to earth, and you truly see that your fans are what keeps the show so popular. So would there be any,
absolutely,
is there any advice you would offer any young dancers out there that want to be you someday?
Oh, goodness. If there's any advice I can give, as simple as it sounds, is just never give up. You know, it seems like I've had a wonderful career that's come easy to me, but it's definitely come with the struggles and many people saying it's not going to happen. I mean, a lot of people looked at me when I was like, I was crazy when I said I wanted to do this for a living. You know, Dancing with the Stars didn't exist at the time and I just wanted to be a dancer. But if you have a dream that you believe to the very core of you, that is what is your sole purpose in life, that's why you exist, is to do that, then never ever let go of it, because there will be more happiness in you trying and fighting through the struggles than you not living your dream.
Absolutely. So where can we find information on you, Sharna, and learn more about you? I know Twitter's a great place. You have a website as well. Tell us all the different areas. And next month, you're coming back, hopefully saying you're a finalist or I've won it. That's what I want. That's why I call my show.
Right? I would love if everybody could follow me at Sharna Burgess on Twitter. Sharna Burgess, and it is the same on Instagram. I've been posting a lot of photos from the show, and I'm trying to do some live tweeting during the show to keep you guys updated. So, and also some little backstage photos. So, if you want to check that, definitely follow me at Sharna Burgess on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, and website is sharnaburgess.com.
Well, you're trying to be me in social media, and you're definitely doing a great job. What an honor to have you on the show, and I'm so happy I get to talk to you next month. So good talking to you, and best of luck the rest of the month.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right, we're live in Pittsburgh at the Andy Russell Celebrity Golf Classic, and I'm a beach lifestyle celebrity segment, and I'm just blown away that my childhood hero, I'm getting to interview Rocky Blyer. Thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm just enthused
You know, I have to take exception, you know, which is childhood hero, which makes me old. But that's all right. At least you remember. No, at least I'm on your show. That's good.
Exactly. No, but I mean, just your story is just unbelievable. For people that have forgotten the story, I mean,
that usually happens.
I tried talking to young people about this, and they tell me, well, you know, they know of you as a super stealer, but not the how resilient you were. I mean, the story, I mean, being wounded, Purple Heart. I mean, all these things. I mean, it's something that you should be considered the greatest comeback person.
Well, I don't know. No, that's not the case. But I think, if it's a story, I think it's a story. It's an American story. I think that's what this country's been built on, people with resilience, people with an idea in their mind and in the persistence not to give up that dream of achievement. Part of my story is that I grew up in the Midwest, and I grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I got a chance to go to Notre Dame and play. But in each one of those segments, and I say this, you know, it was an organization that, from the success of the organization, and you're a part of it, kind of propels you into a different sphere. So in high school, and not to brag, but in high school, we had never lost a football game. And we were the number one ranked team in the state of Wisconsin all the way back in 1962. But I say that, why? Because all of a sudden you get recognized, or the team does, and so all of a sudden people who play on the team get recognized, and I get to go to Notre Dame. In 64, Ara Parseghian comes in. Things change, rules change, but in 3 years, my junior year, we win a national championship. And because of that group, you get recognized, you know, and I get drafted in the NFL by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, maybe I wasn't their first choice. And or their top 10 list. I was the 417th person picked in the draft that year. So there was I was a 16th round draft choice. But when you're out of the Midwest, you go, hey, at least I'm not the last guy picked, because there were 17 rounds. Exactly. You know, I might be able to make this team. So I made the team, special teams, never, you know, played that year. And then it was a 14-game season, and after the 11th game, I got drafted by Uncle Sam, and my draft notification came through, and so I couldn't finish a season. Went to basic training, and then went to Vietnam, and ultimately, as the story goes, I got wounded twice in an action in Vietnam, in both my legs, and the prognosis was that I would not be able to come back and play. And so it was a long time of rehab, not only to get to when I during the period of time when I was still in the service, but then thereafter. And there's always, you know, part of this and a part of the life is that opportunities that present themselves, but also turning points. You know, people that have a belief in you and or give you that opportunity. In this case, specifically, and part of the story is that I had asked my doctor when I was in Tokyo that underlying question that we have, or especially a young athlete has, well, what do you think, Doc? Do you think I can go back and play this game?
Right.
And his response was, don't worry about it. You know, you're going to have a normal life. Don't expect to. You just won't have the strength maybe or the flexibility to be a running back. And so he just kind of sucked that hope out. You know, I mean, he's as an authority figure, your doctor, and you kind of go, oh, okay, I guess. Shortly thereafter, and I say shortly, a day or 2 days, unbeknownst to me, I get a postcard in the mail, simple postcard, and it says this: Rock, team's not doing well. We need you.
Oh, my.
Art Rooney.
Yes.
Well, they didn't need me, but the idea
was just a great.
It was like somebody cared.
Yes,
somebody had an interest.
That's
you
the
know,
Rooney's
and,
for you.
And
yes.
That was the Rooney's, and that's the way they've always been. And they came back. And again, for whatever reason, they bought me a year. They put me on injured reserve that year, and I had another operation. And I came back the following year, and I made the taxi squad again. So what they did was bought They bought me 2 years. 2 years to heal, 2 years to get bigger, stronger,
exactly,
do all those things that are necessary. And then you were kind of on your own in 1972. I make the team again in 72, but it's a special teams. I'm back playing special teams. As I was as a rookie. But magical things happen in 72. First time the team kind of coalesces. We win the division, and we have the immaculate reception and turns the tide, and there's kind of hope in the air. And you come back, and you work, and then all of a sudden there's a break here and an injury there, and you get a chance to play, and the rest becomes history then thereafter, after 12 years and four Super Bowls.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know. So it's a matter of having opportunities that present themselves, but also the desire and the dream the hard work to go through. You know, so when I came back from Vietnam as a lot of soldiers, but, you know, I weighed 165 pounds.
Yeah, no, it's not for the
NFL. So I can't play in the NFL.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So you got to get your body weight. You got to get your strength. That takes time. And then you got to prove yourself, you know, but you have to have the opportunity to be able to prove yourself. So that's what the Rooney family gave me. And, you know, ultimately you have to take advantage of those things.
Those opportunities. And you're very humble because, I mean, to be able to be wounded and then come back and play in the NFL, I wonder if anyone's ever done that before after you.
I don't think so.
That puts you, and I'm not saying on a pedestal,
right,
you're being very humble.
Right.
But the story of you had a lot of adversity just to even make the team. I remember I saw the movie and read the book.
So because the book is true. I didn't exaggerate at all within the book. The movie is true. Robert Urich played the movie. Now, for people who go, "Oh, the movie." Oh, yeah. Well, it was a made-for-television movie. So don't go, because you can't find it on Netflix or anything, because it's not out there on DVD.
Right. I remember watching it on television.
It was on television. Every now and then, especially during the playoffs, will some network start running football movies, and it may pop up during that period of time. But Robert Urich, who played the role, it was a 70s movie because it was shot in 79, but it was a 70s movie. I look back at it in time, I'm going, oh my God, I lived during that period. I'm embarrassed because of how, you know, our hair was long, we wore plaids, and anyway, but I'm glad Robert Urich, because as people may remember me then, because that's how I see myself.
Right, okay.
Tall, good-looking, lot of hair. And so he played the role, and it was fine. People say, "Well, what do you think about the movie?
Exactly.
What do you think about the movie?" I'm going, "Hey, they made a movie about me. It could be bad. They still made a movie about me." And so it's kind of nice to have that happen.
It was an impression on me because I saw the hard work, and I saw somebody that you were the story of Rocky before the story of Rocky.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, they talked about how Rocky stole the story from a boxer, but we have to think about Rocky Dwyer as well.
That's kind of you.
Because, I mean, the way you came back, everyone said, there's no chance. You have no chance in the world. And you were able to do it. And that's fantastic. Yeah. And I think that that's where you see these events raising money for charities, saying people that truly need the help in certain ways and helping out causes that keeps you going, because you want to definitely give back.
Well, I think also one of the things that has taken place, and especially with the team, and especially with the Roonies, especially with the guys that I played with, and the guys that are showing up here, and maybe it was an era of giving back. You know, it was part of the expectation. You have an opportunity to play a sport that's a kid's sport, but you get to play it into young adulthood and a continuation of it. And you come into a community like Pittsburgh, and they pay good money to have a performance on the field. And so you have an obligation. I really feel you have an obligation to give back to that community and to those fans for all those years of support. And Andy has done it, as well as other players. LC's got a golf tournament, and there's numerous others as they show up to support, you know, these local events. And that becomes very important.
And the Rooneys just, again, they took a chance on you. Then you also saw how Art, how just absolutely the Chief, and that to know the Chief.
Yeah,
I mean, amazing. And I'll be getting to talk to his grandson today, and I mean, that's unbelievable as well. Because to know the Chief and to understand specifically about the giving back, and that's what makes the Steelers so special.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. And in part, you know, and part of that is instilled by that organization and by the Chief. You know, in all the great stories about him and what he has had done for not only this community but for people unknown to the masses or to the general public. And and the organization still does that, takes care of people without fanfare and or players without fanfare.
Exactly.
And I think that's something that rubs off, and that's something that you learn, and something that you're appreciative, and something that you as a player and then ultimately now as a fan and a former player want to support.
Exactly. Well, Rocky, I wish I'd have more time. I'm definitely going to get you in contact to have you a phone interview to do two segments to talk about all the stories. We could talk for hours. But where can we find more information on you, Rocky? Your website?
Oh, yeah, I got a website. Yeah, I got a website. don't we all today? No, I have one. It's RockyBlyer.com.
Okay.
Oh, very easy. Yeah, so that's
And also
it.
The Rock on Retirement Show. What time is
that? The Rock on Retirement Show. So I'm also in the financial service business. We do the Rock on Retirement Show Sundays on 104.
That was a great radio
at Sunday. It's Sunday, 12:30 to 1:30.
Thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Have a great golfing outing, and I look forward to talking to you again. All right, you're listening to the Total Education Network Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment and also Total Education with Neil. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Beach Lifestyle Show Celebrity Segment on the Total Education Network. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley, and my other host, G.J. Reynolds. G.J., how are you?
What's going on, my buddy?
All right, Pat. Just doing great, and we're really excited to interview you, and we're going to talk about your book. So first question I have to ask, why did you write the book?
Well, the book I didn't want to write, but I find out people who don't have anything to say write books. So I said, I think I got something to say. I got a pretty good career going all these years. I'm going to be 84 years old, and I wanted some things to say that I know a lot of people would not say what I say. So I've been known a little bit as a, you know, well, he's got a big mouth. When people tell me I got a big mouth, that means I'm doing the right thing and I'm saying the right thing. So I said, let me put some of the stuff in the book. And that's what I did, and it's going great. I mean, I'm not going to get wealthy with it. I wasn't looking for the money. I was looking for just to make a statement, because I feel I've been around long enough. I've done a lot of great things in this business. I'm uneducated, but I say things what's on my mind, and sometimes it costs your family, and it's cost me that too. But, you know, I should have done it earlier. That's my only sad situation.
Well, my my co-host, Pat, he's written a book as well. GJ, haven't you?
Correct, and I'm also impressed with writing another book, and so I'm always interested to hear, you know, from other authors like yourself. So what's been the response to the book on a book that you weren't sure you should write, and you wrote it? So how's the response been to that?
You know, I'm not looking for something else. If you can do something one time, you don't have to explain why you did the one time, and then that's why you do the second time. What I did the first time, that's enough for me writing a book. I'm not interested in writing a book anymore. I just want to get myself together mentally and just let people know my mistakes are out there. And the reason I survived and still in show business and still making a hell of a lot of money is because I have not changed. I have not backed down at what I've done. I've not backed down with my mistakes. In fact, I discuss my mistakes every chance I get, because when you put that forward, the mistakes teach you not to do them again. But at my age, at my age now, I'm looking to go to, you know, to another planet. That's all I'm looking for, because I am I'm honorable with myself. It's over. And one day I ain't going to be here no more. But if I could have my grandkids read some of the things that their grandfather went through, you know, and I talked to him even before the book to try to educate them, That's what I do, and I tell them, it's not a shame to make mistakes, but don't do it a second time.
So, Pat, did you feel like when you first had to write this, was it difficult sitting down and jotting down everything of your career?
No. I had a friend of mine called Steve Guerin, and Hirschlock. See, I gave them the words, and what they did, they orchestrated because I could not do that. So we became partners rather than pay them for the orchestrating it. I said, why don't you want to be a partner, take it, that's okay. And then it's, again, it's not the money. It's not the money. When it becomes the money, then you got a problem. Then it's going to eat you up. Listen, I've never had money. Now that I got money, I'm enjoying it, and my grandkids are enjoying it, and my family, unfortunately, my first family, is not enjoying it because they still got hate. I don't know what the hell's wrong with them, but that's okay. They're on Amazon. They got right about me every 5 minutes, and that's 50 years ago. So what do? You turn around and you laugh at it because they don't know how bad it sounds. Not for me, for them, because I'd say it's too bad. I'm not hurt, and I don't feel hurt. I made decisions. I was old enough to know what I was doing. But when you were not a name called Pat Cooper, you never heard from these people. You could live in the street. They'd never call you. The minute I did Jackie Gleason, I heard every 5 minutes I was going to court. So I laugh at it because this would make a great movie called The Court I Lived In.
And, GJ, I think that you've followed Pat's career as I have as well with, and G has, I remember, you on the Howard Stern show. We'll get to that in a little bit, Pat, but basically, GJ, you remember a lot about his career and how funny he is, isn't he?
Well, most
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you. You can't worry about what people say. You've made your decision. It's out there. If you struck out, you struck out. But there's another inning coming up, and there's another at-bat coming up. That's how I look at it. And if I make mistakes, and you tell the people that are angry at you, I was wrong in certain situations, but the reason I was wrong is you made me wrong, and I accuse you of making me wrong because all I want to do was support my children, which I did for 21 years, and it's still not enough. But you know something? That's sad for them. How would you like to have, when your father passed away, in the obituary that my father left 3 daughters? How would you like that for hate?
Oh, wow.
So they're telling me that I never had a father. So now my older sister wanted to get in touch with me about 6 weeks ago. I says, how can I be your brother when your father died and left 3 daughters, you idiot? And she didn't know what to say because, you know what, that's covering the hate.
Right.
But, you know, that's what makes me... Listen, I wish you would have saw my show Saturday because I make humor out of the situation because most of the people in the audience have their own problems, family style.
Oh, wow. Very funny guy, G, isn't he?
Look, funny guy, and I'm the only Italian that I know who was natural. When I came out doing an Italian wedding on Jackie Gleason, people say, you'll never do that. Jackie Gleason opened the door for me from a guy called Willie Weber, who was my manager at the time, guaranteed me a shot on Jackie Gleason, and he kept his word. So whatever I got today, I owe that man. Unfortunately, he's no longer here, and I tell people he's the guy that opened the door for me, and you don't forget those things.
You don't, G, do you?
Well, that's a good point. You know, never forget where you came from. And never forget who opened the doors to get you where you are. However, you still have to go through the door, and you chose to go through the door. And obviously, that was the beginning of an awesome career that's still going. So,
if tomorrow it's over, I didn't expect to get this far. Don't forget, I have no education. Whatever I did was whatever my background was for me was I was funny. And you were not allowed to be funny in an Italian family during the 50s. My mother and father didn't have no sense of humor. And when you said something funny, they thought you were disrespectful. They'd smack you around. And my mother was a hitter. My mother should have been on the Yankees. But I didn't hate her for that. That's okay. She was trying to raise her kids. I understand that. But they didn't have the patience today. If my mother hit me today, we could lock her up. Which I disapprove of, but, years ago, they didn't know how to talk and go to a psychiatrist. They didn't understand that. the teacher told my father, your son lights up the world. And all my father said, how come I'm paying an electric bill? How does that grab you? He didn't even know he had a sense of humor.
And also, GJ, my co-host and business partner has another question for you, Pat. Go ahead with another question, G.
So what are some of the things that you've been able to do with some of the other celebrities? Because obviously, Jackie Gleason was the one that opened, you got on his show. So what are some of the other celebrities that you've been able to work with, and what was that like?
I've worked with all of them. I don't know who I didn't work with. I worked with Sammy Davis Jr.'s and Sinatra's and Dean Martin's and Perry Como's and George Burns and God, Andy Williams, and I don't know where I didn't go. I worked with everybody. And when I went on Tom Snyder, 1980, and told the world what I thought of some people that I worked with, that they were not nice people and that they disrespected me. And I screamed at them saying, you cannot take my dignity. You are not allowed to do that. You're not smart enough or big enough to take my dignity. I'd rather quit right now. And everybody said, you ruined your career. I said, no, I raised my price 1,000. They said, what made you say that? Controversy breeds money. And when you name big names and say they're really not nice people, people were shocked. But you know something? I didn't get one lawsuit. Nobody turned around and said anything but, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Meanwhile, my price went up. I was making better money, and I wasn't looking for that. And then I became a charitable person. I donated some of that to charities that I loved. And St. Jude was one of the big ones for me. I met Danny Thomas years ago. I admired him, because he stood up and said, I'm going to open up a hospital, and he did. And when he passed away, I cried, because this man did something great. I wish I could be 2% of his greatness to help children without paying. Where do you find people like this?
Yeah, that's tremendous. So there are celebrities, Pat, that are good people, and then there's ones that are really jerks, right? That's what you've run into in your career, pretty much.
Well, listen, there's a lot of great people out there. And, you don't look for thank yous. You do what you got to do. I could have done a lot more, but I did what my salary called for. I mean, you give to the veterans, you give to everybody that you can. I'm not making jest. I give to I think it's called Latoka Indians from North Dakota. Every couple of days they send me fenders that I'm starting to sneeze. I sneeze every 5 minutes, but they're wonderful. They send me fenders around my neck, under my arms, in my pants. And they mean well when you send them $25, $30 because it's helping one of these Indian kids go to school. So it's okay. But I make just out of it from my heart. And every time they keep sending me something with a feather, I don't want to open the envelope.
Well, Pat, you're making us laugh a lot today, and that's good for a Monday.
Well, I love you, and I thank you for having me on, buddy.
All right, well, GJ has a question. One more question for you before we let you go.
What's your 90-day challenge? What would you like to accomplish over the next 90 days?
Let me see if I can read that. What's my 90-day challenge?
Yeah.
What I would like to accomplish?
Yes.
That's very, very simple. I'd like to stay healthy. That's what I'm down to. I always took care of my health. I don't drink a lot. I don't go around messing with women. I was married 43 years, second time. I just want to be healthy for maybe the last 90 days, or maybe another year, and maybe do some more helping St. Jude and some of these people, because something. I have not met the more fortunate man than me. I have not met that man, because no education. I told kids out there, don't be afraid to stand by what's good for you. Because your life goes by fast. I was 12 years old 11 minutes ago. Now I'm 84. What does that tell you about life?
Well, Pat, you're not retired. And as you heard, the Holy Father retired today. You heard about the Pope retiring, right, Pat?
Well, I love people who want to hear about me. I just hope I don't shake them out of their pants. And let me tell you about what I think the Pope did.
Yes.
I'm not a great Catholic, but I will. I analyzed it when I heard it this morning. I believe this man felt he could not do the job anymore like he used to. And all due respect, he was an older man, and I think we need a new young pope.
Right.
To get up to date with the world, because the world is changing, and God love this man. I don't think he's that young enough to handle some of the problems that are coming up, and I love him for retiring and passing it on to someone younger, because I think that's the future. We need younger people, because the world's getting younger, and all this technology is killing us. And we're forgetting who we are, and everything is electronic. Everything is a bigger screen, a bigger radio, a bigger sound, and we're wondering why we're going deaf. That's obvious. That's obvious. I got tinnitus. In the middle of the night, I'm hearing, is that you, Mac? Is that you, Mac? I thought it was my wife talking to me. And look, I wish I could get away with that. I hear music from the tinnitus, but you know something? I could be blind. I could be walking around with no legs on. So I'm pretty lucky.
All right, Pat. Where can
and again,
we?
Again, I thank you, Neil. God bless you.
And where can we purchase your book and find out more about you, Pat?
You'll be well and be. And listen, don't worry about the weather. Unfortunately, people don't know. You know, don't fool around with Mother Nature, because Mother Nature gets back at you. Look at what happened around this country, and some people are now without houses. Now we got to help those people first. That's what we're obligated to. If we're okay, we got to help them, damn it, instead of talking about we're going to raise money or we're going to walk for cancer. I hate when they say we're going to walk for breast cancer. I don't want to walk for breast cancer. I want to donate $1.50 for breast. What the hell am I walking for? Then I'll wind up getting leg cramps. Then we're going to walk for leg cramps. When do we stay home and say, we know what we got to do? We got to cure that damn thing. And what? How do you cure it? With money. And thanks again, Neil.
All right, Pat. You can go to patcooper.com to purchase the book and Amazon and all finer bookstores. Thanks for calling, Pat.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right. All right, you're listening to the Beach Lifestyle Show with host GJ Rounds and myself, Neil Haley, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toljication Celebrity Show on the Toljication Network, toltutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. On the Simply G Media Network, go to simplyg.com to find out more information on G.J. Reynolds, the playful and powerful warrior. And I'm really excited, always, to have Olympians. And this is a definite Olympian-themed celebrity show. Two Olympians from different years, both silver medalists, one from 2012, one from 1984. So we're definitely not bringing back the 80s yet. So I want to welcome the program Manio Mitchell, silver medalist from the 2012 games. Manio, thanks for calling, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, and so I said, remember, we're not bringing back the 80s, like the Radio Shack commercial. I don't think you saw that. That was the funniest commercial ever. That's the only one I liked on the Super Bowl. Did you get to see that when you're watching the Super Bowl? That commercial of Radio Shack, we want our 80s back?
Yeah.
That was my favorite. What was your favorite?
I actually liked the, I think, was it a Doritos commercial?
I forget. So your favorite was Doritos. Okay.
I think it was a Doritos commercial for sure, yeah.
I think it was the worst game ever because I'm a Broncos fan, and I think the commercials were the worst commercials ever, except that one. All right. So Manio, tell us a little bit about your background, then we're going to get to the story. Basically, you got a silver medal in the 2012 games, but then the adversity came during that time. But let's first of all go to your background real quick.
Well, I am from a small town of Mooresboro, North Carolina. Population 330, will it be 329 because I'm not there right now. So very small town. Grew up playing football. Started running track my senior year of high school. And kind of took it by storm, and I started running faster each year and gained the athletic scholarship to Western Carolina University and ran there for 4 years. And then in 2009, started training professionally with my coach, Danny Williamson, at Western Carolina University. And the rest of the story is just, I guess, what they say and call it history. Started seeing improvements in my times and things like that, started taking things very, very serious. Apart from being a collegiate athlete and, you know, going over to the professional rank. So I guess the typical story for each track athlete that has made it to the pro rank, just started from a very, very small background and just trusted my training and my coach and everybody that's involved in, you know, my team. So I guess that's pretty much how I got to where I'm at right now.
So, Manio, once you made the Olympics in 2012, that must have been just the greatest honor in the world to represent the U.S.
Definitely. It didn't really hit me until, you know, after U.S. trials and we actually got through the games and the opening ceremony is where it just really hit that, you know, you made it. You stamped your name in the history books, and you've done this not only for yourself but for your team, your alma mater, your community, and most importantly, your family. And, you know, just to go out there and just to be there wasn't enough. And just wanted to go out there with a goal to win. And no matter how that would happen, I just, you know, I was inspired to do that and to inspire people, you know, for a generation. So
tell us about first of all, the experience of winning that silver medal. Take us through that process, and then let's go to, I guess, the adversity afterwards.
Yeah, well, my story is a little different from most people that medal, I guess. I was actually running the prelim. I was the first runner of the prelim of the 4x4 meter relay for Team USA, an event that we, at that time, up until that time, had never lost before. We'd always gotten gold. I took off, and, well, actually, 3 days before the race, I tripped going up the stairs in the Olympic Village where we were staying, and they seemed to think that that's what set up a bone bruise or a slight fracture. So 3 days later, of course, I get the call. I have to run the first leg, the biggest deal for me ever in my career in track and field. And, you know, I get out there, I feel good, and the gun goes off, and everything just starts going downhill. I get out, and I'm not running as fast as I usually do. And I'm like, you know, something's wrong here. So mentally, I'm like, okay, I got to keep going. So I get to the 200-meter mark, which is halfway in my event, and my leg just snaps. And, you know, I'm faced with a decision at that time to either keep running or just to give it all up and just let all those years of hard training and,
oh my, yeah,
you know, competitive spirit just go away. So I chose the first option, which was to keep running. And probably a lot of people say I probably shouldn't have done that, and I probably, you know, messed up my leg even more by continuing to run. But it was more than just running to me. It's a lifestyle that I live now, and it was something that I was going to have to live with for the rest of my life, regardless of the decision that I made. So I chose to run for those three guys that were waiting for me to come back. So, and not only those guys, but an entire country that was depending on me. And again, that support team that I mentioned earlier, my family, my friends, my coach, mentors, all those people, I didn't want to let those people down either. And you would think that you don't really get to think about stuff like that in the amount of time that we run in 44 seconds. But, you know, I thought about all that stuff within a split second, and I just kept running, and I made it back.
So did you ignored the pain through that when it happened? You just kept going?
Yeah. Physically, it was very demanding to get back to the other where I started from, obviously. But mentally, you know, I just challenged myself, and I took myself away from the actual race and just said, you know what, as long as I get back to that finish line and just trust, you know, in my faith that I can make it there, then no matter how fast or how slow, those guys that come after me will do their job. And they did just that, and I'm very fortunate that I had three guys to support me.
Well, absolutely. So basically, you finished the race, and then take us through. So basically, they still qualified, and then your team ended up winning the medal, right? Is that how it happened?
Yeah. Basically, you had to be in the top eight. There were two prelims, so you had to be in the top eight teams to make it to the final. And we ended up, even with my slower time, I was a second and a half off of my PR, even with a broken leg. So it's crazy to think about what we would have ran if I would have been healthy. But we ended up running 2:58.70, which is the fastest prelim time ever in Olympic history. So we made history both on the negative and positive side. We ended up tying with the Bahamas in the prelim to make it onto the final, and then they brought in a reserve to take my spot, and we ended up coming just a little bit short on the anchor leg, and we got silver instead of the gold that we're used to getting, which, I mean, to most people looking on the outside in, they'll think, well, you guys should have won, blah, 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 but if they really knew what we really endured that year and that season, especially with me breaking my leg, and had I not even, you know, finished that lap, we would have never made it to the final anyway. So
exactly. So you would have gave up that you never would have had a medal. So you were the one that showed your perseverance and really resolve and did it. And so that's a tremendous story. And I was talking to people that are fans of yours, and they said, my gosh, what an unbelievable just comeback thing, because once you break it and you keep going, so basically you go and you meddle and you say it was worth it, because if you would have not meddled at all, the whole country would have been, you know, saying this was a complete waste of time and everything went horribly, but at least you meddled and now you're looking forward to Rio, right? And that's your goal.
Oh, training
for Rio now. Is that exciting, especially a different country like that? That's a pretty interesting country to have the Olympics, I think. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, London was great. I think any city that hosts the Olympics is probably going to be the top tier. They want to make sure that everything is perfect for you. But, of course, I think Rio would be a blast, and that's the plan, is to make that team and to go back and defend, you know, a title that is rightfully ours that we're going to get back. And for me personally, I like to make it individually in the 400-meter dash. And so that's my goal right now. That's what I'm working hard towards. And, of course, there's going to be a lot more into it for me than most people that go back if they go back, because I left a lot out there, and I don't want to come up short again. And I have a lot to come back from. So a lot of people are rooting for me. I have a huge fan base. Of course, people know me as the guy that broke the leg in the Olympic Games, but now they'll know me as a champion because I'm working that hard to get back to where I was to get better. So,
well, Manny, yeah, I'm rooting for you right now, man. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to keep tweeting you out and see how things are going in specific ways. And we air this on syndication, and our syndicators re-air it, so we'll keep getting it going. But now I know you're excited about talking about something else as well, and that's IncrediWare. Is that how you pronunciate it? So tell us about it.
Basically, how I got about to IncrediWare was, obviously, the pain that I endured and stuff like that after the break in London. I struggled with, you know, coming back and recovering with shin splints. And I put my fibula bone in half, so it took about 16 to 17 weeks to actually get it rehabbed fully so I could actually run again. So I didn't run for 16 weeks straight. And I couldn't do any lower body lifts or anything like that. So I was looking for products that, you know, could aid with my recovery and get me back on the track so I could attempt to make the world championship team on last summer. So I found IncrediWare. I started wearing it's called a Tech 3 calf sleeve. And I noticed that, you know, I had an increase in blood flow. I wasn't getting the shin splints that I was normally getting when I first started coming back into the training process of learning how to run again at top speed, elite speed. So I'm definitely grateful for, you know, that product, and I still use it to this day. I actually have my sleeves on right now. Just finished up a workout not too long ago, so it's definitely a plus in my training.
And it can help, especially with recovering from an injury, especially because then that the pain will end up going to a spot like that. So this will help
exactly.
In the process, because we all know as athletes, we might have something aching, something else will ache as well because of that injury, because you're kind of putting that pressure on that part of it. So excited that you're definitely promoting that and all that stuff. And where can our listeners purchase this IncrediWare? Tell us where they can go to.
IncrediWare, they have a website, IncrediWare.com. And there's multiple items that you can get and try out. I prefer, of course, as a runner, I have the sleeves. I also have the hip. It's like a hip sleeve, so when I do my abdominal exercises or core exercises, I'll strap that on, and I don't feel any pain, so I can do three times the amount of sets that I would normally do with the sleeve on. So, but there's all kinds of products on there. There's products for post-surgery, pre-surgery, all sorts of things, man. So if you guys just check out IncrediWare.com, and maybe you'll see a picture of me on there, maybe not.
Well, absolutely fantastic. And Manny, we're going to definitely have our listeners check out that product, make sure that link is on our syndication so that we get people to go do that. Now, I'm a fan now. I'm going to go look back. I was just looking at the story, but do you see a book in the works at one point in time, Manny-O? Do you see a book? A book. Do you see a book, writing a book about your story someday? Do you see that happening?
I definitely do. That's something that I've actually been discussing with a few of my colleagues and a few mentors that, you know, they say I inspire all these different types of people, and that's great. But to have it in a book so people can have it with them at all times would be great. So, but the thing is, I don't feel that my journey
is over yet.
Is over yet. I feel like it's just starting. So,
well, I'm going to be rooting for you,
for
sure.
We started writing, Yeah, for sure.
So I'm sure you're excited. Keep working hard, training in Rio for Rio and all the different things. But Manio, where can we find information on you as well? You have a Twitter, I'm sure, and a Facebook.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
where can they check those things out? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm very open on the social media website. So Facebook, just type in my name, Manio Mitchell, M-A-N-T-E-O. On Twitter, same thing, @ Manio Mitchell, M-A-N-T-E-O again. Instagram, same name. Huh. Everything's the same, so you can always find me. I'm out there.
it's very difficult, isn't it, to keep up with the social media, but you see how important it is because your fans really are for that, and I'm sure you were so excited once you came back from London how the fan base grew from getting from 15 minutes of fame to a celebrity in a matter one event. And I'm so glad for you. Yeah, exactly.
It was crazy, for sure.
And I'm glad that you continue to go in the ride and appreciate you taking the time, and always like to have Olympians on because you guys are tremendous people. It's a labor of love. You don't make tons of money at first, but you truly have a passion about the sport, and I'm glad that you're here to promote it, and best of luck to you. So thanks again for calling.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll have you back definitely to update us in training and different things. Just reach out to me, and we'll make sure we can make it happen. Okay, Manio? Take care.
Sounds great.
All right,
take care.
All right, see you later.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. You're listening to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.